Welcome. This is Dr. Susan Kalb with Temple of Health Radio Show, and today I'm pleased to have Michael Brown with his book, The Presence Process, A Healing Journey into Present Moment Awareness. Michael is calling from South Africa, and we appreciate him doing this. What time is it in South Africa, Michael?
It is 7:13 p.m., a decent hour to do an interview for a change.
Well, that's great. I'm glad it's not the other way. Well, I really enjoyed your book. I feel that it contains some very pertinent information, especially for a lot of people now, because a lot of people are in quite a bit of turmoil in their lives. Their finances, their health, their relationships are in swirling in turmoil, and they keep trying to fix it by fixing something outside of themselves. And I think that your book explains why that's not going to work. Would you like to, and then of course it gives you a great method for actually changing it at the basis of it, because if you don't change the cause, all you're doing is swatting at the effects. It just doesn't work very well. You want to tell the listeners a little bit about your background and how you came to your journey through the presence process?
Well, it began in the late 80s when I got a severe acute pain condition called Horton syndrome. And so I had a lot of pain, and it came at various times throughout the day, about 8 times during the day. So I couldn't ignore it. And I went the conventional route, which we go when something happens in our lives, is I first tried to do something physical about it.
Right.
And so I approached, medical doctors, tried pharmaceuticals, and then I did other physical things. You know, I went to an African Sangoma, and eventually I went to people and had them lay their hands on me, and I had my wisdom teeth removed, and I had cortisone injections in my face, and I went through that whole gamut of physical activity.
Uh-huh.
And then when that didn't work, then I started going into what I call the metaphysical, which is trying to, do energy work and understand it. And I started learning about, auras and chakras and sound and light healing and all that sort of stuff, which to me is exploring the mental aspect of the experience.
Uh-huh.
And that seemed to begin to alleviate or lessen the severity, but it didn't assist me in getting to a causal point. And then along my journey, I was introduced to this concept that underlying every aspect of my experience, my physical and mental experience, was also an emotional component. And it's only when I went in to explore the emotional components of my experience, which I used various approaches, I used ceremonial approach, plant medicine approach, but the one that became most efficient was through the breathing. It enabled me to become aware of the emotional content, the condition of my emotional content. And through that, I discovered that my emotional content was imprinted into my experience by the time I was 7 years old. It became a story that I told or words that I placed upon it, as I went into my schooling and mental activity. And then as I moved further into the physicality of...
Hello?
Are you there? Are you there? Sorry about that. This is...
Oh, that's okay.
We can tend to get cut off here a bit. So as I was explaining, it was only when I got to the emotional aspect of my experience and learned how to integrate that I managed to integrate the physical aspect of my experience and to remove the pain completely. And through that, I had a revelation about, how our awareness enters the world and how the causality of it is very much emotional, what I like to call self-perception, and how we mentalize that and then how it becomes physical circumstances. But that through our journey of entering adulthood, where we go through our education system, become very mental about everything and then have to go and deal with the physical responsibilities of being alive, We kind of shut down our emotional aspect or our felt aspect of experience. And as we do that, we also shut down an awareness of the causality of what's going on with us. And so we do tend to try and change things physically or mentally, which are effects of what's going on in the emotional body, and therefore they're, you know, ineffectual in actually adjusting the causality of an experience that is causing us great discomfort.
Now, you had a condition called trigeminal neuralgia, is that correct?
Yeah, that has various names. You know, I think people give funny names to things that they can't understand, but basically
yeah.
what it was a cross between you know, what we call migraine and cluster headache.
Okay.
It was a severe swelling of the nerves up the left side of my face, in my eye, ear,
uh-huh.
head. It's also called it's also called suicide headaches because it has a very high rate of people opting out because of the intensity of the pain. So I was forced to show up and pay attention to that pain. That pain, to this point, was one of my greatest teachers.
Well, would you mind sharing with the audience what you found at the emotional level that shifted and then shifted the physical with this particular?
Well, I found immense amounts of rage and
mm-hmm.
underlying that an immense amount of grief. And that came through the experience of my own childhood where
mm-hmm.
I had, a losing of my father at the age of 5 and the way that he left the world also caused me to lose my mother because she emotionally shut down. So
right.
in one day, I lost my father and the presence, you know, the emotional presence of my mother in my life. And so from that moment, that imprinted me with a lot of fear,
mm-hmm.
An immense amount of anger, and underlying that, an immense amount of grief. And those imprints, those impacts, what they are is they're like energy patterns in the emotional body that are deeply uncomfortable to us until we integrate them. And what I discovered was the way that I dealt with this discomfort was to resist it by sedating or controlling it in any way possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was only until I went in and actually allowed myself to feel what I felt as a child without condition, without
mm-hmm.
judging it, without going to the story, without projecting it outwards. When I allowed myself to feel my fear, my anger, and my grief, and let those energetic circumstances run their course, then that intense discomfort in my emotional body was resolved.
Mm-hmm.
The thought patterns attached to it about myself and the world I live in as a result of this pain, just, you know, they dissolved, and then the physical symptom of it dissolved. So, but it wasn't until I actually allowed myself to go in and re-enter. Now, the experience, the insight that I received about why I was having this pain only came after the integration of
mm-hmm.
the pain. So, first of all, I had to go in and feel that pain, not knowing where it was coming from or that discomfort. It wasn't a case of me understanding that my father's death had caused all this in my situation. I didn't have to understand that to heal myself of it. I had to go in and feel it because it was underlying my experience all the time. So the breathing and ceremonial work and other modalities I used enabled me to gain an awareness of that unresolved felt experience. Once I let that energy move to a point of completion or integration or resolution, it was only then that I received the insight of what it was about, which was backwards to the way that I was taught to approach things in the world, which is you've got to understand it, you go in for therapy, you do a lot of talking, and when you finally understand it, you will resolve it. And to me, that's a very big trap because I, as a 5 years old, you know, when I had that experience, I didn't have a vocabulary to describe that experience to me. It was just a massive, uncomfortable felt experience happening all around me.
Right.
So there was no way talking could take me back to a place where I wasn't mm-hmm. really using talking to describe what was happening to me in the first place. And this is when I discovered that journeying through felt perception was the way to access the causality of imprinting that was causing discomfort in my present adult experience.
Yeah, and sometimes when patients don't realize what is behind something, whether it be cancer, whether it be a chronic pain, especially severe chronic pain, really gets your attention. I usually
yes.
have I set the energy in the healing room. You know, I do energy medicine. And then I allow the emotion to come up. And a lot of times the patient's really surprised by it. They might have forgotten how
Absolutely.
Much grief they felt when their dog died when they were six, you know. I mean, they'd forgotten
yes.
it completely. But yet that grief is an energy. That I mean, the emotion
yes.
has more energy than thoughts do in the majority of people, unless you're a master and can really focus your thoughts intently. Most of us at this point are creating with our emotions rather than with our thoughts. And I think that that's something that I really like
yes,
about your book, that you've recognized that.
Yes, creating with thoughts only becomes truly an authentic process once we've resolved the emotional stuff that is underlying our, you know, our unconscious behavior. Otherwise, normally what we're doing is we're bouncing off those emotions, trying to get what we want rather than moving ourselves in the direction of what's required for us. And I was taken completely by surprise by my emotional content too, because I would say up until 1998, I was a very nice person. I was very nice person to be around. There was no sign of anger in me at all. And it was only, around about 1999 that I was shown how full of rage I was.
Mm-hmm.
And only once and that took me completely, it terrified me how full of rage I was. And I say to this day, one of our greatest fears is the amount of rage we carry and what will happen if we let it all go. And we think it'll be the end of the world, we'll destroy everything around us. But I found when I allowed that rage to surface and to be there, without telling stories and projecting it outwardly, then
mm-hmm.
it actually led me like a flowing river into my grief. And then when I allowed that grief to flow, that's when the absolute integration experience unfolded.
And you know, many of the people who study the mind-body connection with serious diseases such as cancer say that many patients with cancer are nice people. And I would propose that maybe the socialization pressures that force us to be nice rather than irritable, the better
yeah.
you are at that, the more likely you are to be at suppressing this energy down into the physical. I've always been able to express myself more directly, and as a result of that,
yes.
I think I have much less issues in the physical.
Yes. Well, I love the word, and I play a lot with words phonetically, as you will see if you read any of my writing. And
mm-hmm.
one of the words that I enjoy is the word cancer, because it tells you something about the symptom, and symptom means some time, the piece of time that it's relating to. And, for me, the story of cancer often is, can I get any more blood out of you? Yes, you can, sir. Yes, you can, sir. And,
that's interesting.
And also people with chronic headache syndromes and, migraines, cluster headaches, that's all rage. You know, that the energy of rage is absolutely immense. And when that builds up in the system, it's like putting too much electricity through a house. It's going to blow a fuse.
That's
and
right.
Something like a chronic cluster headache or a migraine is the physical body being overwhelmed by that energetic circumstance
mm-hmm.
that is now being released like a pot releasing steam and now blowing a fuse through the physical experience. And most people who tell you that they have migraines or cluster headaches or those chronic headaches, once that headache has gone through its course and passed, they usually feel very good and relieved and released afterwards, because that energy
right.
that's built up has now been released. But because the causality hasn't been dealt with, that build up is now going to slowly but gradually happen again.
Right, yeah. And people are trying to blame everything on physical causes, food allergies, environmental things that, and in some cases that's true. I mean, certainly people get migraines after eating certain foods and like drinking red wine with the sulfates and everything. But you have to understand why this one person has a tendency toward headaches and this other person never gets headaches. You see, there's
right.
there's that as well.
Well,
so we have
reason,
a,
You know, the reason why we blame the physical world is because when we lose an awareness of the causality of our experience, which is this the energetic flow coming in from the vibrational, then we tend to perceive the world as something that happens to us as opposed to something that's happening through us.
Right.
We cannot know that our experience is something that's flowing through us if we are not engaging consciously with the causality of the experience. And so it's a natural state that when our felt perception is shut down and sedated and controlled, that we are automatically going to try and change things by fiddling with something physical or fiddling with something mental, you know, trying to change the way I think and saying, you know, I don't have headaches.
That doesn't work real well. and that brings us to a little bit about behaviors that we engage in order to suppress these emotions, which in your book you very well describe as many of our addictions. You want to comment on that for a minute?
Well, anything that we use to try and feel better is an addictive behavior and will become, if we follow it through, if it works to make us feel better, then it's going to become an addictive behavior. And that can be anything from work, sex, food, etc. The intent of this work is not to assist us to feel better, but to get better at feeling. And one of our greatest addictions is what I call the two-fisted punch. And the two-fisted punch is reactive behavior that we learn from our peers. It's imprinted to us through our parents, and we don't even realize we're doing it until it's shown to us. And so the first punch is for me to cover up what I'm really feeling. That's the first punch. So whatever going on in my emotional body, the authentic condition, I cover it up in any way possible. The other punch is to now replace that feeling with another feeling. So we go around shutting off our own feeling and then replacing it with another feeling. Whatever we use to in that two-fisted punch, whatever works really well for us will become our source of addiction. And so the intent of alchemy, or the intent of this work to integrate the authentic condition of the emotional body, is to teach ourselves how to stop going into that battle, that reactive battle with ourselves, of covering up what's going on and then replacing it with a feeling we would rather be having. And that behavior is called trying to feel better. So we'll do many things to try and feel better. You know, we can even do all our spiritual disciplines to feel better as opposed to get better at feeling, because intent, you know, governs whatever practice we're doing. And that is the source of all addictive behavior is simply self-medication, because, you know, you can go to anyone to try and solve your problem or to resolve your problem, but unless they know how to get to the causal point of their experience, all they're going to advise you to do, and the word advise is also interesting, you know, add another advice. They'll tell you what they're doing to feel better, what works for them to feel better.
And then might not work for you.
And then that practice.
Right. Well, I have a method.
The key to identifying addictive behavior is whatever we're doing to try and make ourselves feel better. That's all.
Okay.
It's quite simple.
Well, I have a method that I was guided to use during my I took 5 months off for spiritual development, and since I didn't have any, you know, cluster headache or outstanding physical or emotional condition, and you know, many people don't. They have many small things. What I did was ask, I was guided in meditation just to ask for like a flashcard to come up, and the flashcard would come up in my inner vision, and I would look at it. And, you know, sometimes the flashcard was, you know, bankruptcy, or it was, you know, loss of a loved one, or if it was getting cancer, or it was, you know what I mean? It was just a flash would come up, and then I would allow myself to go into that and feel that. That was what I was guided to do, was to feel what that would be like to be in that situation. And then after I felt it very deeply, I just released it. I mean, I just threw it out, threw the flashcard away. And then I went through a series of, probably weeks of doing this. And what I found was that all of my deep-seated unconscious fears had been felt through. and then therefore my my energy level, or whatever you want to call it, I call it spiritual vibrational level, went way up, and then I was able to do the work I was able to do, which was the, you know, the spiritual healing energy medicine piece of it. It really allows you to go
You bring up a good a point here, because these are things that so many people are dealing with at the moment. They are dealing with bankruptcy, with unemployment, with with increase of states of disease and anxiety. And, you know, the misunderstanding about this work can be that if I just take care of the emotional component, then I don't have to do anything mental or physical about my condition. And that's not what this work's saying. This work is saying you have to act in this world and take action. But if we're not aware of the causality of our experience, our action is not going to be a response to our situation. It's going to be continually a reaction to our situation. Mm-hmm. And so whatever conditions we are facing, because as a planet, what we are doing at the moment is we are integrating the condition of our collective emotional body, and that we do individually, but it's happening collectively. We can see it, the emotional turmoil all over the world coming out as, you know, mental stuff and as physical experiences. But for example, for someone who is facing, who's unemployed, for example, it's not that if they do this work, they don't have to go and look for a job. It's to do what you're talking about, to bring up that flashcard internally of I am unemployed. Now, being unemployed has three aspects to the experience. And to every human experience that we're having, any outward experience, there's three levels to it. There's a physical level of actually physically being unemployed. There's a mental level of the story I'm telling myself about why I'm unemployed and what my opportunities are.
I'm worthless,
my possibilities,
you know.
Are.
Or your lack of worthiness comes up when you're unemployed.
Exactly. But underlying it completely is a felt experience that is deeply uncomfortable. Unless I allow myself to explore that felt experience, and to be aware that that's a causality of my experience, and every day to visit that felt experience in a way that I allow it to be there. For example, if I'm watching a bird in a tree, I don't watch a bird in a tree to try and get the bird to do something. I just watch it. I'm not trying to change it or affect it. And so it's the same with the emotional body. When I become aware, for example, of the resonance of fear or whatever it is, or anger or grief underlying my sense of being unemployed, my task is to watch that felt experience like I would a bird in the tree. Allow it to be there, allow it to be valid. And if I'm visiting that aspect of my experience every day, it is more likely that my mental state and my physical state, my physical behavior in the world is going to be responding to my sense of unemployment rather than reacting to it. If I ignore that discomfort, all that I'm going to do in the world to try and get employed, et cetera, is going to be reactive behavior, trying to make me feel better about the felt resonance related to being unemployed. Mm-hmm. So it's very important that the listeners know that action is required in life, but the action that we want is response, not reaction, because reaction always is a spiral, is a circle that brings us back to where we were before. It never takes us anywhere out of our emotional imprinted state.
And one of the ways people can tell what they need to work on too is what is repetitive in their life. Are they attracting the same problem within their relationships again and again? You know, the woman that marries five different men and they all have alcoholic problems. You know, whatever pattern is repeating in your life. And in your book, I like the example you give. You know, people try the geographic answer where they move across the country, but then they have the same problem in California that they did on the East Coast or even in South Africa,
right.
No matter how far you move. Because we really are filtering our experiences are coming out through filters. I guess we're attracting to us what we need so that we will look at the filters we have that we need to drop to achieve balance. I mean, it's all, as you said in your book, it's all about balance, but we have filters in place. And like one that's very common and one that I'm sure you're familiar with in South Africa is that, you know, if I'm a certain skin color, I'm better than other people of different skin colors. And that thought is not imbalanced. That is an erroneous thought. And yet, if you have that filter, everything you, it doesn't matter which way you go either. I mean, because people on both sides of the color issue and all extremes in between have similar problems with the filter. But it will certainly shape your experience in life. You will experience, you know, different things because you have that filter.
Yes, imprinting is multidimensional.
I'm sorry?
You know, imprinting, we have all sorts of imprinting that happens in childhood. So we have, you know, sexual imprinting, racial imprinting, religious imprinting, you know, societal imprinting. All of this imprinting takes place. But one can get lost in that mentally if one gets too, you know, involved in trying to explore that and understand that. So the easiest way for anyone to identify their issues to, because the issues are always, the emotional signature is always with us. We don't have to go back to our childhood. We have to go inward to our childhood. And the issue is the emotional resonance is always there at the surface, and it always comes up as the way we get upset. Whenever we get upset, we're not being upset, we're being set up. And what we're being set up to see externally through events around us is what we're unable to see internally because our self-perception is shut down. Because to actually perceive our emotional imprinting requires a different set of eyes. You know, we have to realize, we have to use our real eyes to see our emotional imprinting. And to see our emotional imprinting doesn't require the physical eyes, although you can use them when you see the physical events in the world and see the physical events upsetting me. But if you to see those causal points requires felt, the eyes of feeling. And if I'm trying to feel better and sedating and controlling myself all the time, sedating and controlling my authentic condition of my emotional body, I'm simultaneously shutting down my capacity to feel because I'm shutting down my feelings.
Right.
So I can never see the causality of my experience. So the one way I can see the causal issues is by whatever upsets me is a memory surfacing as a physical event and as a story I tell myself about it, always the same old story that I tell. However, the actual memory itself is the felt experience underlying the upset. And unless we are taking care of that felt experience, then we're in a state of reaction. Once we start taking care of that felt experience, then we enter a state of response. And then are able to move through that upset, that setup, gain the insights from it, and move forward with our lives without re-entering this repetitive cycle of engaging our emotional imprinting over and over again.
Yeah, I had something upset me yesterday, and so I used the theories in your book or the teachings in your book to look at it. And when I went and looked, I then was shown that most of the time when I get upset, it's this one issue. And then I went and looked at the emotion behind that, and basically it was the issue of having, you know, a lot of great responsibility, and yet when I was asking people to help me, they failed to do so. Do you see what I mean? It's like they failed to be helpful. And so, you know, I'm currently working on that myself in terms of trying to turn that emotion around, and then I'm going to see if maybe my external reality doesn't shift some so that I feel that I am being helped and also that I allow myself to be helped. I think a lot of times, you know,
yeah, so you're talking about a sense of being overwhelmed is what you're talking about.
Right, right.
And
well, I'm a surgeon.
And that's overwhelmed.
Like
if you go back to that upset that happened yesterday and you just remember that upset, there's a felt experience related to it. And if you allow yourself to feel that, you'll actually be able to engage with it as a physical sensation within the body.
Right.
And that there is the body memory of a child who feels overwhelmed, but that child never had the word overwhelmed in their vocabulary. They simply had an experience going on around them that overwhelmed them. And when you learned words and language did you call it overwhelmed and responsibility and et cetera, et cetera. So the words are helpful to a point, but unless we allow ourselves to just sit with the self aspect of that sensation and allow it to be there because it's valid, And that's the whole thing about this work, is what this work says is whatever is happening to us is valid. When I'm trying to feel better, what I'm really saying to myself is that my experience is not supposed to be happening. I'm supposed to be having another experience other than the one I'm having. And what this work says is no, the experience that we're all having in the moment is valid, and only when we validate our experience by allowing those feelings to be there and to nurture them as a loving parent who sits with a crying child and just is with the child as it cries, doesn't try and fix it or explain things to it or give it a sweet to feel better. When we treat ourselves that way, then that felt aspect within the body will actually begin, the physical sensation of the felt aspect will actually begin to move. And it'll actually move through the body. And actually, when it gets to a certain point of integration, there is often a case of tears and an emotional shift that takes place. Then we know we've impacted that causal point on some level. Although there doesn't always have to be tears, the only thing that's required is that we place attention. So, you know, to visit that point of upset, the felt aspect of it, not the understanding of it, all you need to do is visit that every day for a few minutes and say, you know, I'm putting my attention on this felt aspect, I'm remembering the upset, where it is in my body, and just being with it every day, it automatically resolves itself. The emotional body doesn't need to be guided by us. For example, if I eat a banana, I don't have to tell my body what to do and the banana where to go after I've eaten it. The body knows what to do with it, and the banana just automatically knows where to go. The body will guide it and turn it into nutrition. It's the same with the emotional aspect of my being. I don't have to tell my anger and fear and grief what to do to come to a point of resolution. I just have to get out of their way so that they can flow. And they know how to move energetically to a point of resolution. Just like a river doesn't have to be told how to get to the ocean. It doesn't need a map and a navigation system, etc. You let the river flow naturally. It will find the ocean. And it's the same with our emotional content. If we take off all the conditions we've placed on our emotional body, the sedation and control behaviors, the emotional body automatically flows to a point of resolution.
And in your book, you describe that once this process is done, and it starts by being in the present. I mean, that's where you start with the book. But once this process is done, then you don't have to overcome any addictive behavior. You don't have to, you know, physical symptoms resolve if they are due to that suppressed emotion. Things just automatically are happening without you doing things that, I mean, obviously, if you're unemployed, you have to go out and get a job. I'm not talking about that, but these things, the flow of energy when it shifts, then the causation things will just go away. The direct.
Well, you know, my insight at the moment and my experience of my own experience, because I take everything first out of my own experience and then I validate it by seeing if it's actually unfolding on other people's experiences too. And the nature of being in the world at the moment is there's no point at arrival for most of us at the moment of where we get to a place and everything's just fine. You know, that's usually emotional numbness. If we're in the world at the moment, we are processing emotional imprinting that comes from generation after generation after generation. Once I do personal imprinting, then I'm looking at my religious imprinting, my sexual imprinting, my racial imprinting. There's all sorts of stuff that, because the planet at the moment is in a process of integrating generations and generations of stuff. So the thing is not to try and find a place where I don't have to do anything anymore and everything's just fine. That's an illusionary state that's been given to us by a lot of spiritual practices, which are destination consciousness. And that's because they're mental. Only the mental body has a beginning and an ending to anything. There isn't a beginning to anything and there isn't an ending to anything. Things just change into something else and come from having changed from something else. So that it's ongoing. The emphasis on this work is to go from reaction, living in reaction, to living in a state of responsibility, which means it doesn't make my life easy, but it brings ease into my life. Because when I become the navigator of my experience, when I take responsibility at the causal point of my experience, then you can throw anything at me and it ceases to be such a big issue, or it's just another bout of energy flowing through my system that I'm going to be unconditional towards. And it may feel uncomfortable when I engage it, because the nature of the mental body, too, is that it describes anything it doesn't know about as being uncomfortable, wrong, dark, bad. And right. So whenever we are engaging more and more of the vibrational, which is will always remain largely unknown to us, as this energy flows through us, it feels unfamiliar. But what we have to do is transform our perceptual relationship with the vibrational, the spiritual, and stop trying to sedate and control what God is to us, and rather allow us to engage each day as a new point of responsibility. And that as long as I'm alive in the world, I'm responsible for the quality of my experience, and uh-huh. therefore I'm responsible for making sure the felt aspect of my experience flows, continues to flow, and I don't block it up. And there's never going to be a point at which I'm not responsible for the causal point of my experience. So the moment, if I say I've arrived, and you will find this in people who set themselves up as teachers and then place themselves on a pedestal as having arrived, and then get people around them who treat them as someone who's have arrived, watch what happens to those teachers. They have severe physical ailments coming up and all sorts of things happening around them, because there is no point of arrival. It's an ongoing journey, and it's just a choice of saying, I'm going to be responsible or I'm not going to be responsible. If I'm not going to be responsible, I'm going to have a very challenging time, especially living as a human being in the world at the moment. But if I choose to be responsible, then I'm actually doing my work, and there's all sorts of grace that comes upon us when we take responsibility for the causality of our experience. But it doesn't take away the bumps in the road. The bumps are going to be in the road. It just means we're going to drive in a different way, right?
And you know, that's indicated by looking at the lives of, you know, the Dalai Lama, Sai Baba, you know, any of the great masters and teachers we've had. They've had tremendous bumps in the road, assassination attempts, you know, the Chinese army going after them. I mean, it really is. I point out the same thing to people who are beginning the spiritual journey, that just because you're on a spiritual journey doesn't mean that you have a life of ease. In fact, it may mean that you have great challenges, but then you also have great resources to face those challenges. And
suffering will come from any belief that my spiritual practice takes away all the bumps in the road.
Right, it will.
That will cause a lot of suffering.
Absolutely,
teaches me how to be a responsible driver. That's all, you know.
Yeah. And also, if you are able to quiet your mind, and I like the breathing exercises and the other things you describe in your book, the other exercises, once you learn to quiet your mind, and it can be in meditation or it can just be while you're driving down the road, it doesn't really matter. Eventually, you develop a conversation with the higher aspect of yourself, who then explains things to you, and it explains why certain things are happening, and then that way, when you get this additional information, you can be patient. I think one of the masters said that if we knew the outcome, we could all be very patient. But the problem is we don't know the outcome in our present-day awareness, and so we become very impatient because we don't know what's going to happen. And this clear seeing aspect of when your third eye opens up, you can see how things are going to manifest and why they're doing it, and then that allows you to be more patient and more, I guess, forgiving of other people's behavior, and you know, you understand more why they're reacting like they're reacting, and don't take it personally. And you know, I try not to take anything personally, because it's not about me.
Yeah.
It's about the you know, the energy movement throughout the group. And if it's always about me, then I'm always reacting rather than being in the present moment.
You bring up a very good point, and that is that the emotional work, the work of emotional integration, is what connects us to the spiritual aspect of our being, or the vibrational aspect of our being. And the fear, anger, and grief, you know, I call fear, anger, and grief the guardians at the doorway of heaven, because unless we integrate them, we never develop the level of responsibility which allows us to become full co-creators of our experience. And so we never really get to have that wonderful opportunity of being, you know, powerful co-creators. Mm-hmm. And this is because if I'm suppressing my fear and my anger and grief, and I'm suppressing my capacity to feel, then how can I really engage with what peace is? Or how can I engage with really what life really is?
Well,
the life
you can't do anything because you're using all your energy to do that. Yeah. You know?
Well,
you only have so much energy.
And love and, yes, all these things are felt experiences. You know,
right.
We feel at peace. We don't think at peace or do at peace. We feel love. We don't think love, do love. You know,
mm-hmm.
We feel alive, and if I'm shutting down my feeling capacity because I don't want to feel my imprinting, I'm simultaneously shutting down my capacity to feel these vibrational aspects that are always available to me in the moment. And by allowing myself to feel my fear and feel my anger and feel my grief, I simultaneously allow myself to awaken, reawaken, and develop the felt aspect of my experience that enables me to feel the vibrational. If I don't allow myself to feel the emotional content of my being and to integrate that, I will seek the spiritual experience from someone else's experience. Maybe it'll be in another country. Maybe it'll be in another practice. You know, maybe it'll be in another life. But it'll never be happening for me now because I can't feel it now. And so this is a crucial part. This is why humanity is at the moment facing emotional integration and having to deal with all this emotional stuff coming up. You know, at the beginning of the program, you said so much stuff is coming up for people. Well, this is the big setup. You know, it's a big upset for us, but it's a big setup. Mm-hmm. So we can clear generations of fear, anger, and grief, and simultaneously, as humanity develops the capacity to engage with our ultimate causal point of our experience, which is the vibrational, and to live in the world, but know that we're not of it, that we're, you know, that we're
right.
Something bigger than just the physical experience we're having.
Would you like to give your contact information, your website?
Sure. You know, people can find out everything about this work through the website, and that's called the Presence Portal. They can also find out through Namaste Publishing. And so the Presence Portal and Namaste Publishing will guide them to everything they need to know about this work. On the Presence Portal is an entire resource center. Most of it's absolutely free writings, free audio, free video, which enables someone to go and explore this work to see if they actually want to engage with it experientially. Once someone wants to engage with it experientially, I recommend getting the Presence Process and entering the 10-week procedure, which mm-hmm. teaches us how to enter the emotional body in a very compassionate, consistent, you know, responsible way, which is really important that when we enter that, we become responsible about what we're doing. And so, you know, to know the to understand what this work, what the consequences of this work and what terrain we explore, that can all be done on the Presence Portal before actually engaging with the work.
Well, thank you very much, Michael. We appreciate you calling in. We've been interviewing Michael Brown, whose book, The Presence Process, A Healing Journey into Present Moment Awareness, is not only a great work to demonstrate the one of the great ways we can engage in spiritual practice, you know, without going halfway across the world or without, you know, having a lot of trappings of religion and other things that might take our focus away from self-development, and I really appreciate his approach emphasizing greater responsibility. I think that is something that's not done very often when people are guiding others to spiritual paths. Next week, we are going to be interviewing Stephanie Marone, who's the editor of the Goddess Book. This is 42 women leaders, including Angelina Jolie, Jane Fonda, Madonna, Barbara Walters, Michelle Obama, and Oprah, and of course myself. I wrote the book, the chapter here called The Spiritual Healer in Synthesis Medicine. Stephanie is the editor. The next week on the 13th, we're going to be interviewing Peter Dezabon, Consciousness is All, Now Life is Completely New. And then on the 20th, we're going to have Dr. Lynn Horowitz back to discuss an update on the flu pandemic. Dr. Horowitz is a PhD in public health who has written a bestseller called Emerging Viruses, is on the forefront of the issues of viral illness. And then on the 27th, we have Pat Lynn Kyle, Heal Your Mind, Rewire Your Brain, Applying Exciting New Science to Brain Synchronicity for Creativity, Peace, and Presence. So that's a long title. Of course, we have Noetic Science. That's the third Thursday of every month. We're going to be meeting Thursday, March 18th at the Dunwoody office. Tricia McCannon is going to be giving a presentation on her book, The Secret Teachings of Jesus. This book will be coming out in March from Hampton Roads. It's a fabulous book about Jesus, the initiation schools, and really the ancient mystery traditions that are available, and how he became an initiate onto a master, having gone through these schools. These are historical teachings, new material. The people in the academic worlds are very, very excited about the idea of Jesus as an avatar within the Great White Brotherhood. This is, I think this is information that needs to come out now. And, of course, Michael's book, The Presence Process, is how you can start in your own home with a daily practice that's very, very easy and very, not difficult to do if you just commit to it, if you understand what it can do for you. I think it's a great way to start on your own personal spiritual journey. Thanks so much, Michael, for being with us. We appreciate it. And this is Temple of Health Radio Show. We will be back next week.